Welcome back to another episode of A Desi Woman Podcast. I am your host, Sonia Gokwai, and the voices I am seeking may have never been heard before, but their stories deserve to be told. What is a Desi woman? She is a dynamic, fearless, and strong woman. She is your mother, your grandmother, your daughter, your sister. She is every one of us who is on an endless pursuit of self-empowerment and fulfillment. I am Sonia Gokwai, and I am a Desi woman. Hello, and welcome to another edition of A Desi Woman Podcast. I am your host, Sonia Gokwai, and today we are so excited to be joined by Saira Rao. Saira grew up in Richmond, Virginia, the daughter of Indian immigrant. For 40 years, she wasted her precious time aspiring to be white and accepted by dominant white society, a futile task for anyone not born with white skin. Several years ago, Saira began the painful process of dismantling her own internalized oppression. Saira is a lawyer by training, a former congressional candidate, a published novelist, and an entrepreneur. She is a graduate of the University of Virginia and NYU Law School in New York City. Saira, welcome to the show.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me.
Saira, Race to Dinner started when you ran for Congress and started openly talking about race during the campaign. As you recount on your website and in interviews, you were constantly being approached to go to dinner by white women who wanted to talk to you about race. And many would say, I don't like the way that you're talking about us. So at a certain point, you and Regina Jackson both just looked at each other. And to quote your site, you said, Regina, you're Black, I'm Indian, we're of different generations. Let's show them what it looks like to discuss race as sisters. I'm not doing solo lunches or dinners anymore. Let's do this as a group. Hence the beginning of Race to Dinner. So if you could tell me more about this and the fact that it is currently white women only, I do think that the South Asian community could benefit greatly from this. Just a thought. And I might add that while these dinners were once in person, due to the COVID pandemic, they've moved to a virtual format and yet are still hugely in demand. And even now offering individual sessions and even for colleges and corporations.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. You want me to just talk about what Race to Dinner is?
I do. And just how it started. And also, I have to add that I really think you need to offer this to South Asians as well. I really do. But anyway, yes, the formative start of this and how it evolved from women approaching you about your campaign.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. One quick thing. We are going to be doing it for South Asian women. So let's put a pin in that. And
yay!
I would love it if you want to even spearhead the first one because...
Oh my gosh, I'm honored.
Really important, especially as our population grows. So let's just definitely have a conversation about that. So when I ran for Congress, you know, anytime I spoke, there's line out the door. Can we meet for coffee? Can we meet for drinks? Blah, blah, blah. And I had to go, right? Because I was running for office. And I'm not kidding you. It was, I would say, almost without fail. Let's give it like 99%. Maybe there was a 1% situation where this didn't happen. But it was, you've got me wrong. I'm not racist. You know, you're really articulate. I'll grant you that, but X, Y, and Z, but you're really angry. In fact, after my debate with Diana DeGette, there was like pearl clutching ladies waiting to chew me out. And one of them literally said that three times, called me angry three times, but was sort of amazed that I was as smart and quote, as articulate as I was. And I said, look, it was like the third time. I said, I'm just going to give you like a free bit of advice. Pick another word besides angry. When you refer to brown and Black women as angry, it has really bad racial connotations. And she goes, I can say whatever I want. My daughter's Indian. And I had an Indian friend there standing there. And she was like, no, you can't. That's not at all how this works. Right? So back to the personal relationships, not solving things. And I wanted to be like, well, I'm really sorry that your daughter has such a racist mom, but I didn't say that. I would now, but I couldn't do it at that time. So, you know, I had to sort of grin and bear it during the 5 months I ran for Congress. And it was after the fact. So it was months later, Regina and I met because she volunteered on my campaign and she would marvel. She was like, this is amazing. You have like lines out the door of women literally just waiting to tell you that they're not racist. And, you know, we would joke about this and laugh about this after the election was over. And then she had a friend, we'll call her Becky, who had been a supporter of mine. And on Facebook, which I'm no longer on Facebook, but on Facebook, I had said, you know, I'd said the worst possible thing a human being could say, which is Beto O'Rourke is a white savior. And I said, and I would still vote for Beto O'Rourke, right? Back to, you know, our choices are so slim. She went totally crazy. And that evening, Regina calls me and she was like, Becky called me today and said that she was done with you because you hate all white people. But she wants to know if you can have lunch. And I just start laughing. And I was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, that's how this happened. And so we did. We invited Becky and cobbled together some other white ladies who had asked me for dinner recently and had a dinner at my friend Katie's house. And this Becky went totally buck wild, like crying, screaming. I mean, the whole like white woman, the musical, you know, like the three act play of white fragility. And Regina was like, oh my God, this is nuts. I mean, this is totally nuts. And then we posted about it on Facebook a couple months later. I'd actually gone to India with my family, came back and posted about it on Facebook. And it went viral. And that's when Race to Dinner was born. And really, I mean, the thesis really is it's intersectionality. That's why we're doing this. We're not doing this for our health. And contrary to what the media reports on, we're not getting rich off of this. You know, we are modeling Black and brown women solidarity. And every dinner, they try to pit us against each other. Every dinner, because that's how white supremacy works, pitting marginalized communities against each other. And our thesis is, if we can start picking off white women and having white women stop choosing whiteness over sisterhood, we can overthrow the patriarchy together. That's the thesis. You know, 2 years in, it remains to be seen if these white ladies are even capable of conceiving of such a thing. But I'll say this, roughly 8 women at every dinner, at least one woman is transformed out of each dinner. And the ripple effect that that one woman can have in her own community is massive, you know, work, family, friends, kids, schools. So it's like trying to transform the culture one dinner at a time, essentially.
Absolutely. And I would agree with you that the way that the media has portrayed this is that white women are paying thousands of dollars to be told how they're racist. And such a disservice to what you're doing. But again, it does demonstrate the white supremacy, as you've stated, even in the media landscape.
Right. It's kind of amazing.
It is. And, you know, I was going to ask you, what sort of questions or issues come up at Race to Dinner as race is being discussed, and how do you state your goal for the dinners? I do know from your site and from past interviews that the hope is that white women can unabashedly say, I can be part of the solution, but I'm also part of the problem because I'm white. I'm therefore conditioned by the system to be racist. So can you offer more about this?
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, it's shifted a little bit. So, you know, early on, we were really trying to get white women to even acknowledge that they were racist, you know? And then what ended up happening, which is classic, is, you know, most of the white women would just shut down and let the sort of vocal one white woman at the table speak up and be honest. And then that white woman would be honest, and then they would all like kind of beat her up, you know, because that's what white women do. Is white women are constantly in competition with each other to who's going to be the most perfect. And that's white woman perfectionism, which we know doesn't exist. No one's perfect. And so what would happen is like one person or two people would get beaten up by their fellow white women. And those other women would either sit silently or just be nasty to their peers. So it really is a situation of we get these women to actually be radically honest in the moment. And so it's like, let's talk about how racism shows up in your life at your behest. Like, let's talk about how you are racist and what racist thoughts and actions you've thought about and done in the past year. And I'll tell you what, Sonia, it works. Like, and they can't believe it. It's like, you know, denial. You have to get past denial in order to get anywhere, right? And when they actually have to do it, the words just start coming out. I mean, they really do it. And it's a revelation to them because they've never done it before. And the thing that we hear over and over and over again, we had one over the summer, actually, with a Canadian company, and it's a, quote, feminist company. And they have 10 leaders, right? Out of the 10 leaders, only one is a non-white woman. Okay. And they didn't even notice it until they put together the race to dinner. They didn't even notice it. That's whiteness, right? You're so cocooned by white people that you don't notice anything because it's all default. And so these women work together. And the woman who put it together was the CEO of the company who'd actually been really publicly nasty to me 3 years ago. And so this is what I say. It's like, sometimes it works, right? She reached out to us to do one of these dinners for her team. Wow. And I was blown away. I was like, oh my God, like I wasn't going to even say what she had done to me because these women all work for her. She started the conversation by coming clean about how she had been extremely racist towards me in public. And so she set the tone that it was safe for her employees to be forthright and honest. They start talking and they're saying this, not just out loud, but like in front of each other. These women work together every day. So now suddenly they've opened the door to having these conversations, you know, regularly, which they've continued to do from what I can understand. And one of them said, she told us something that happened at Christmas the year before. Her boyfriend was black and her mother said an extremely racist thing and she didn't stick up for the boyfriend in the moment. And so he had to endure that and spend the holidays at her house, you know, and she was silent. And she said that she knows that she's silent all the time in the face of this. And she said she's never admitted it to herself and she's never said it out loud. And then she said, I feel like the weight of the world is off my shoulders. And that's what we hear repeatedly. Even in, there's always someone who's going to cry. There's always someone who's mad. I was told that my chakras were off. Like Regina, you know, has war energy. They're also very specific. They, you know, African war energy for the African American woman and chakras for the South Asian woman. They know exactly what they're doing, but it's always this revelation and like, it feels good to be honest. And then the hope is, right, one dinner is not going to do much unless you keep up the work. The hope is that you now have broken, by way of process, the taboo of talking about this. Hopefully you'll take that into your real life and sort of in every situation that you're in.
I agree. And I really am so excited that corporations and companies are signing up because I'll tell you what, I mean, those are the companies I would want to work for. And it's going to be a tool, I predict, a tool for talent recruitment and retention, especially diverse populations, which truly they can't recruit enough of diverse folks. I mean, and so I really applaud you on that front because I am tired. I work in corporate America and continuously just a parade of Caucasian males, white men or white women, but certainly no diversity. So it's really exciting that you guys
But I just want to flag, even our language is so coded, right? Diverse folks, use the word diverse folks. Why are we diverse folks? Even the term, like, why are people diverse? Yeah. White people are not, why are they not diverse? Like, that's the kind of language. And so, you know, what we've seen since the summer when white people discovered that racism existed this past summer, you'll recall, they've also since forgotten. You know, they posted like the little black box in their Instagram and put up a sign in their yard and bought a couple books and they thought that they're all cured. But diversity, equity, and inclusion is the new buzz, you know, the buzz. You can't airdrop some black and brown folks into a white supremacy culture and think that you're all good. So what these institutions need, just back to truth and reconciliation, institutions need to decolonize just like our country does. And so having tokens, and by the way, I was the number one token. I was as colonized as it got. Like, kids that I grew up with in Richmond used to call me a coconut, you know, brown on the outside, white on the inside. I was the worst. I thought I was a white woman until 4 years ago. Nobody was more shocked than me to discover that I was not white. So I get it. But you know, again, putting Black and Brown folks into these positions without decolonizing is dangerous. This is why retention is so hard, because you have the same white supremacy culture with Black and Brown people. And it's not safe for us to be honest in these scenarios, because they hire us to shut the fuck up and look nice on their brochures. And, you know, it pains me to see how DEI has exploded without the accompanying anti-racism and, frankly, anti-whiteness work. So DEI is code for, like, in my mind, most of the time, token. What these companies need is hardcore anti-whiteness work, not even anti-racism work, anti-whiteness work, anti-white supremacy work. Who's doing that? Nobody. Nobody's doing that, because that's back to you can't say the word white.
Sarah, I really like an example you give about an attendee at one of the Race to Dinner functions who was a young white woman who happened to be a yoga instructor. You jumped right into the tough conversation at dinner by stating, just so you know, the yoga practiced by white people in America is cultural appropriation. Cultural appropriation is a form of racism. So can you tell me about the chorus of women who jumped all over you when you stated this and even asked you to apologize after you made that statement? And by the way, just reading that and taking that in really impacted me. As an Indian woman, I never understood things from that perspective. I just knew that indeed, yoga is an ancient tradition from our Indian culture that was suddenly very fully embraced here in the West, but to your point, seemingly owned by a white majority in this country.
Sure. There are people who entire pedagogy around this, right? So I'm not that, but I'll tell you what happened at that dinner specifically. It was a white woman from, of course, Boulder, Colorado, who is telling me that, you know, she's a yoga instructor, and I say that. She doesn't say anything. It's a white woman to her right who is a real estate broker who doesn't even know her. Okay. They're not even friends. She flips out. She reaches over and tries to grab me by my collar and says, "You need to apologize to her right now. Right now." And I just start laughing. I'm like, "I don't think you know who you're dealing with here." And this woman, the yoga instructor, is like, "No, she doesn't." And she was like, "Please don't apologize." I'm like, "I'm not apologizing to anyone." And so it took the white yoga instructor to tell her to stop, to make her stop. And she said, "No, Syra's 100% right." So that's the other thing. White people can hear it from other white people. They can't hear it from non-white people. So this woman was like, you know, calmed by the white yoga instructor. And so I was like, "Well, why don't you elaborate a little bit?" You know, because this real estate broker is like, "Well, there's no Indian and Black yoga instructors to work at these studios." And I was like, "You know what? Why don't you go? Because I can say it," but she's not going to listen. And this woman goes, "No, there's actually lots of Indian and Black yoga instructors in Colorado, and they don't get the jobs." And she said, "I've had conversations with studio owners about this." And she's like, "It's by design. It's by choice." And I was like, "Yeah." And also all the like shirts that say like spiritual gangster and namaste y'all and namaste bitches and all these white people are speaking in Sanskrit and all of that. They're taking somebody else's culture. They are perverting it. They are boxing out the people whose cultures it is. And they're the ones who have the funding, right? And then she was like, "So why don't you all just build your own studios?" And I'm like, "Yeah, right. Because, you know, South Asian and Black women have so much funding to just like go in and start businesses left, right, and center. And then they make a profit off of it, right?" That's the critical piece there, is making a profit off of it. Then things devolved at that particular dinner. There was a white woman sitting next to Regina, who is a civil rights lawyer. I mean, you really can't even make this stuff up. It's like a bad SNL skit. She's a civil rights lawyer, and her parents during the 60s were big civil rights activists. She starts crying, and she's sitting next to a 70-year-old Black woman, okay, who has survived Jim Crow. She starts crying and she goes, "Do you even understand what it feels like to be called an N-word lover?" But she kept using the N-word in full and referring to how she was talked about in class because her parents were civil rights activists. Regina was so stunned, and all these other women were like, "Oh my God, like, you know, poor you." We let her finish her histrionics and finish her drama. And Regina just said, I just want to flag for you that you just, A, said the N-word repeatedly, and you are telling a Black woman that we should feel bad for you. Like, do you understand how crazy this is? The rest of them didn't even realize how crazy it was until she pointed it out. Like, this is how much the head is in the sand, you know?
Syrah, I cannot believe we're at this point in the interview, but my final question for you is about the usage of Karen and Becky and the fact that many white women have called other white women these names. So I wanted to find out what your take is on this and advice to our listeners. Are these phrases okay to use, not okay to use? Just for listeners who may not be aware, as we do have a global audience, in 2019, the dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster wrote that Becky was, quote, increasingly functioning as an epithet and being used especially to refer to a white woman who is ignorant of both her privilege and her prejudice. The term Karen has similar connotation, but is typically associated with older women. So wanted to get your thoughts on this, Syrah.
Sure. I mean, no, it's not. I think that white men love calling white women Karen and Becky because of their misogyny. And then white women calling other white women Karen and Becky is a version of not me. So that's like, those are the bad white women and we're fine. So I think it's despicable. I think it's disgusting. And it's worse in some ways because it's meant to be funny and pithy, you know, like it's they're being ironic and we have no tolerance for that. And first Becky was the buzzword. Now it's Karen. And at every dinner, someone will refer to someone as a Karen and we'll say no. And we point out why. And it hasn't occurred to them. And so, no, absolutely not. It's a version of not all white people when white people call other people Karen and Becky.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for joining us today, Syrah Rao. And I will be having links for Race to Dinner on the podcast notes. And I really thank you so much. Just this has been an incredible experience for me. And I cannot wait to collaborate with you. It's an honor that you would even think about me as you foray into the South Asian population.
Yes, so let's definitely talk offline about that. And to your listeners, if you're a South Asian woman or man, please, please, please get in touch with me because I'm laser focused this year on our own community.
Ah, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.